I'm Brandon Hollingsworth, and from WUOT News, this is Dialogue. What kind of year has it been? 2013 was a year of many events. It saw fissures developing in the Republican supermajority and disagreements between state legislators and Governor Bill Haslam, who this year will run for his second term in office. The state's economy did improve, but it was at a pace slower than some economists expected. Ahead of us stretches a year that will be marked by political challenges and debates about subjects we can't even begin to guess. Joining me this hour are three panelists who will talk about the developments of 2013 and look ahead to the developments of 2014. Looking back and looking ahead, that's our theme this hour, and I hope you'll join us for Dialogue, coming up after this news. Minutes after 1 o'clock Eastern Time on this Wednesday, today the 8th day of January. Good afternoon, I'm Brandon Hollingsworth, and this is Dialogue from WUOT News. 2013, a busy year in state politics, in economics, education policy, so many other topics in Tennessee. And 2014 looks to be just as busy, if not busier. And so we're going to sort through some of those issues. We're going to look back at some of the big stories that made headlines last year and try to make some guesses about what we might be talking about in the year yet to come. Joining me here in the studio are Dr. Bill Fox, director of the Tennessee Center for Business and Economic Research, and Dr. Mark O'Gorman of Maryville College. Gentlemen, good afternoon to you.
Hi. Thanks for having us.
Good afternoon.
And joining us live from our fair state capital, Nashville Post reporter Andrea Zielinski. Andrea, good afternoon to you.
Good afternoon. How are you doing?
Doing very, very well. Well, let's start off in the deep end, if we will, going right into the issue that I think was very interesting in 2013. And Dr. O'Gorman, we'll start with you. 2013 was a year in which we saw some cracks developing in the GOP supermajority in Nashville, particularly between Governor Bill Haslam and some of the Republicans in the General Assembly. We saw disagreements over the possible expansion of TennCare. We also saw some hesitation from Haslam over some of the bills that were approved by the General Assembly. So how serious should we take these divisions within the party? How ultimately significant are they?
I think they are significant in the sense that anytime you've got elections coming up, the U.S. congressional midterm elections, of course, in November, and then just other elections at the state level, anytime you see within a party a challenge within the party, in this case, more far-right, far-conservative legislatures who were trying to move forward their more conservative agenda, and Governor Haslam trying to be more bipartisan, you're always going to see that intra-party debate. I think the governor can get past that, but it's something that he can't ignore because elections are coming, especially for him this year as a re-election, and so he has to at least address the people within his party and try to make some kind of compromise within his party first, and then before between parties.
Yeah. Andrea, I want to ask you that same question. When you're out there covering this as part of the state capitol press corps, how are people talking about these divisions within the party? How seriously are they taking them?
Well, I'll say last year, after the end of the legislative session ended on the kind of rocky terms between Republicans in the House and the Senate, even that kind of clash there, it was something everyone acknowledged to some extent. But, as time goes on, leaders have kind of shrugged that off, that no, everything is great, that there's a great working relationship, but the fissures are still there. You still have the Lieutenant Governor Ron Ramsey, who has now taken a hands-off approach to helping anyone in the House of Representatives, any Republicans in the House of Representatives, aside from his local lawmaker. And that was something before where he was more willing to help there. So I guess what I'd say is it's a matter of there are divisions. It's just as time goes on, they just try to pretend that they're not there, but we expect to see a lot more of the kind of inter-party squabbles in the next year.
And Democrats, of course, are not faring much better here in Tennessee. The party is in a real Interesting crossroads, if we could be polite about that. The deadline for gubernatorial candidates to qualify is coming up in March, and so far the Democrats haven't fielded or even proposed a serious candidate for Governor Haslam to take on in November. Dr. O'Gorman, what does that say about the state of the Tennessee Democratic Party? What are you looking at when you see these actions taking place?
You see a party that's trying to struggle to rebuild or at least keep whatever momentum it has. Any state party always looks first to the national leaders. Same presidential party in office with President Obama. But I think within the state, so many of the elections are now turning more red, so to speak, in terms of Republicans. And also just given the fact that so much of the discussion now is in terms of the far-right challenge, in terms of Tea Partiers and that I think it's very difficult for Democrats at any level, any ideology, whether they be moderate or even conservative Democrats, to become part of the discussion because so much of, so to speak, the action is occurring right of center.
Yeah. And Andrea, we're seeing some Democrats have announced they're not going to run for new terms in the legislature in 2014. Some have resigned to take other posts. And there's also been some leadership problems going on in the Tennessee Democratic Party. If you would maybe outline some of those issues for our listeners.
Yeah, right now there's I guess the best word for that is consternation among among Democrats over the leadership. Right now, Roy Herron is the chairman of the Democratic Party, and when he was elected, there was a split vote among people, among Democrats who were electing there. So there's still that kind of trickle-down effect when it comes to the legislature. You had Democratic caucus chairman Mike Turner, who about a month ago said he thinks he's done, that he didn't want to be in leadership anymore, and there had been some... pointing to some of the frustration higher up in the Democratic Party. Now, since that, they've tried to iron that out. And Mike Turner, who's led, has been a leader in the House Democratic Caucus for several years now, he's said he's going to stick around in leadership. But yeah, that's not exactly on stable footing there either.
Well, and I saw a report just yesterday that Mike Turner was perhaps mulling at least a bid for mayor of Nashville as well. So, I mean, here we have another example of a state legislator on the Democratic side who may be looking for an escape route or an exit route. Does that seem to be the case to you?
Yeah, I think he's thinking pretty seriously about that. And if you think about it, though, if you're a Democrat who's been in the legislature for a while, you got to enjoy the perks of being in a legislature that was run by Democrats. And now it's not quite as fun anymore. You know, you're trying to get bills passed with a Republican, you know, supermajorities where you really have to play nice to get something passed, or Republicans can just kind of take your idea for a bill and they can pass it themselves. I mean, it's not as... you know, clearly it's not as enjoyable and as productive being in the legislature as a Democrat right now than it used to be. So yeah, this mass exodus that we're seeing, I guess it isn't surprising, and especially for Mike Turner looking to see what his options are elsewhere, and being that Nashville Mayor Carl Dean he's going to be term limited and his term will be up in 2015. You know, that's pretty good timing there.
And interestingly enough, to pivot back over to the other side of the aisle, are Republicans in the legislature looking at that as areas to make up ground where they say, hey, you know, if we don't have an incumbent Democrat who's running, we might as well count that as a free seat for us in November? Is that how they're talking about it?
Largely. There's a Senate district out here, which has been held by a longtime Democrat, Doug Henry, who actually... is in the hospital this week. Mm-hmm. He's 87 years old. He announced he was going to, earlier last year, he announced this would be his last term. Anyways, it's a district that has traditionally been Democrat. And, you know, there are a couple, you know, very lively Democrats who are looking for that seat, but Republicans have not ruled out putting a Republican there. And they think with the right candidate, they could actually win that seat. So no, I think they aren't just satisfied with a supermajority. I think they are still looking to pick up additional seats.
And that makes sense almost in any state, at the fact that if you feel that you're gaining momentum as the supermajority party here with the Republicans, if you can go that much farther, you're going to do all you can, and any open seat becomes a competitive race, and you want to do all you can to go after it.
Exactly right. And that's something that when I talked to another political scientist at Carson Newman University a couple of years ago, he was talking about that same phenomenon, that when Democrats ran the table in Nashville,
right,
it was much the same way.
That's
so
right.
This is not at all unusual. Dr. Fox is reading War and Peace over there while we're talking about politics, and so I want to turn to you for just a moment. And as the director of this Tennessee Center for Business and Economic Research, you're looking at all the factors that are coming in, the economic health of the state. How would you characterize Tennessee's economic health in 2013? What were some of the big threads that you thought were interesting?
Well, the Tennessee economy, like the national economy, continued to rebound in 2013. So that's the really good news. Looks like, from most of the indicators, we probably underperformed the national norm. Some of our sectors, like manufacturing, did great. We outperformed the nation, and employment was expanding rapidly. But construction and information services, government, were all big declines in Tennessee relative to the nation. So on average, we didn't do quite as well as the national economy. And as a result, our unemployment rate actually went up a little bit while the national rate went down.
Now, there's something interesting, too, that happened, and that is that the budget that is crafted each year to plan out state spending is based in part on what we think tax revenues will be. You know, of course, the funding for state government comes from those tax revenues. And this year, at least so far in the fiscal year, which began in July, we've seen tax revenues sort of missing those projections. It looks like people perhaps are spending less, and you had indicated in a previous conversation with me that it could show that maybe Tennesseans' buying patterns have changed. Do you think that's still the case?
When we look at tax revenues in total, they're going to clearly underperform our expectations for the year. There's going to be a shortfall. The only issue is how large it is. I'm sure when the governor's budget is put together, it will anticipate a $100 million plus shortfall for the current year, and then weak revenue growth for next year. But it's mostly coming from the corporate taxes and really poor collections there, and just kind of out of nowhere. Corporate collections through April of last year, when just like people are doing on their federal tax returns, you're making these big corporate payments, were extraordinarily good. And just like that, they fell off of a cliff, and the quarterly payments that corporations made in June and September, what we've seen so far through December, all suggest that companies felt they must have overpaid for last year. They're getting some refunds. They're slowing down what they're paying. Then add to that just modest growth in the sales tax. It's not really much lower than we expected, but it's modest on long-term historical standards. Suggests that consumers aren't as willing to go out and spend and build up credit card debt. It also says that they're out buying online and not paying the sales tax. And that's actually my fear for when we see December's collections. I think holiday sales ended out being acceptably good, a little over 3% growth. You know, it's not great year, but not bad. The trouble is a lot of that is revenues that look like, or sales that took place the 21st, 2nd, 3rd, 4th of December. And those were probably online. And if these were folks buying from Amazon or Overstock or something like that, Tennessee will get relatively little of the sales tax collections. The revenues are due, but not collected. So put it together, an under-collection for this year for sure.
Do you think that lag is going to continue, that sluggish tax revenue going to continue into 2014 as well?
You're talking about into calendar 2014, because
we're already in fiscal 2014. I know, that's true.
And, you know, I think what we've seen right now, as a person who helps do the revenue projections, I have to assume it will continue. Whether it will or not is a different thing. But you have to be conservative on the revenue side, because you're building a real budget that is expected to be balanced. And so what I fully anticipate is continued weak collections through fiscal 2014, growth in 2015. But you know, if the state gets, let's say, $200 million more next year than was originally budgeted this year, that would be great. And that is a very small amount of money, additional money, to put together a budget, given the growth in 10 care expenditures, the growth in the BEP and other things. I can tell you it will be a challenge passing a budget this spring. It will happen, but it will be a challenge because there will be so many revenue pressures, in my view.
We'll pick up on that thread and have much more coming up in just a few moments. That was Dr. Bill Fox of the Center for Business and Economic Research. And we also have Mark O'Gorman of Merivale College. He's a political scientist there. And Andrea Zielinski joining us from the Nashville Post in Nashville. We'll take your calls as well. We'll open up the phone lines in just a moment. But first, at 19 minutes after the hour, this is Dialogue from WUOT News. minutes after 1 o'clock Eastern Time on Wednesday, the 8th of January, and this is Dialogue from WUOT News. I'm Brandon Hollingsworth, and we want to include you in the discussion as well. If you have questions for our panelists about the year gone by, the economics, politics, education, all kinds of topics in Tennessee, then give us a call at 974-5050. You can tweet your questions at WUOTFM. You can also go to our Facebook page. That's facebook.com/WUOTFM. Well, before the break, Dr. Bill Fox was talking about some of the difficulties that will be facing Governor Haslam and the General Assembly as they prepare the 2014-2015 budget, which will be happening in the next few months. Andrea Zielinski, part of your beat is covering the state capitol and state government for the Nashville Post. What are the discussions that are taking shape there about how this budget debate is going to play out?
Well, I think Bill had it right that so far, we're hearing a lot of, the budget's going to be tight this coming year. In the fall, Governor Haslam had his traditional budget hearings, heard from each of the state agencies about what it is they're looking for in their budget, what their budget proposals were. And he had asked them at the time for 5% cuts. Now, it was right around that time that we were starting to see this trend that the revenues had been down. So since then, the conversation has really just kind of tightened, that the governor believes, I think many believe, that this will be the toughest budget year yet for the governor in his 4-year tenure. So what exactly that means, it probably means more surgical cuts in state agencies and less money to go around, which is going to be interesting considering there are a lot of proposals out there that are going to require some money. The governor announced that he would make it a priority to increase pay for teachers by the end of his tenure. So assuming the end of his tenure is this year or whether it's in another 4 years, that's going to involve some financial investment. You have increases in 10 care costs, increases in education costs through the BEP. A lot of these organic costs are going to eat up a lot of cash. So it's going to be very interesting to see where exactly those cuts are going to fall.
I think as a general rule, the budget people in Nashville think of K through 12 education and 10 care as off the table in terms of cuts. It's just that there's not any easy ways to cut 10 care, and K through 12 education is a priority. You take those two off the table, and that's at least half of the own source financed state government. So where you're going to make cuts has to come from that other half. And you're now talking about the university system. Again, it could be highways, but since those are mostly financed with the gasoline tax, it's probably something that's off the table too. So you're getting down to a relatively narrow set of the expenditures of the state that are potential areas where these surgical cuts can take place. And that's why when the governor begins to talk about, let's say, a 5% cut, he's narrowed down the set of things he's thinking about and saying where can we create that kind of savings.
And this sounds to me a lot like the debate that was shaping up last fall and through most of 2013 on Capitol Hill in Washington, that the big fighting over the budget and eventually the government shutdown that was precipitated was really kind of a fight over pennies on the dollar. It was not big ticket items, but a lot of smaller things. Dr. O'Gorman, are you seeing that same kind of parallel, the way the discussion is shaping up in Tennessee?
Yes. I mean, in terms of what was said earlier, in terms of, education and 10 care being the two big things. But also just the fact that I think just nationwide, I think it's just what you're seeing here is that the budget debates aren't just a discussion of our finances. They're political statements and they're political debates. When you have everybody in the United States House running for re-election in November, you have Governor Haslam running for re-election, you have to recognize that not only are you making cuts to try to get to a balanced budget at the state level, you're also making choices in terms of what citizens, what voters you may or may not be impacting. And so this was happening at the national level during the October shutdown. This was as much a political fight of whether Obamacare should be continued to be funded or defunded. We're seeing that at the state level too. It's much a political as it is an economic debate.
It's interesting because we've been mentioning off and on during the first half of this program that Governor Haslam is running for re-election this November. Doesn't face a serious Democratic challenger yet, as we talked about. And his re-election chances actually look pretty good, regardless of disagreements that they may be having within the party. His approval rating in a December Vanderbilt poll was 61%. 4 years into his term, that's a very good place to be for him. let me ask point blank, Mark, is his reelection fait accompli at this point?
I think any incumbent politician would have that kind of high approval rating would be very comfortable right now. Of course, you just can't take anything for granted. And I would argue, just given the larger political climate where with everyone, I think every, especially Republicans, need to look to the right a little bit to see if there's any primary challenger. But also just the current, I think he's in a very good place. The fact that Sarah Kyle was one of the top Democratic challengers, she just she announced just a couple of days ago that she was backing out. Many people consider her one of the stronger Democratic challengers that could be coming out. I think the playing field's pretty open for him. He can't take anything for granted, but it'd be a good place to be in if you're an incumbent governor.
Right. Andrea, I want you to expound upon that as well. What are the conversations like in Nashville? Are there any Democratic candidates that could be taken seriously either now or on the horizon?
You know, the one other, I guess, semi-serious name that we had heard was Craig Fitchew, and he's a Democrat. He's the minority leader here in the House of Representatives, and he had floated the idea about a year ago that he was thinking about running and then later dropped off. And reporters had asked him yesterday in a veil with reporters that, no, he's definitely hasn't changed his mind since Sarah Kyle had dropped off. He had said that, you know, there's a lot of for him to do in the House of Representatives, a lot of seats that are needed there to be picked up, that he's not going to deviate. So no, at this point, there's not much in the way of names of folks who can be coming out. The general consensus is it would have to be someone who is independently wealthy, who can kind of fund their own campaign, because you know, anyone who does run would have a steep financial hill to climb.
And as we've been pointing out as well, with Democrats who are saying they're not going to run for re-election in the state legislature, we don't have any. Well, let's see, there are two, I guess, of Tennessee's nine congressional delegation that are Democrats, neither of the two U.S. senators, certainly not in the governor's mansion. It's a pretty bleak environment out there for a Democrat who would want to try his or her hand at office. Do you think this trend is going to be this way for a while, that we've seen sort of a major pendulum shift back to the right after so many years of Democratic control in Nashville?
I think it's a pendulum, and I'm not sure that it's done swinging at this point. Mm-hmm. I think I can be wrong, but I think there's not enough of I think Republicans have too much momentum at this point to be for Democrats to really be making some solid gains. That doesn't mean that they're not going to pick up a seat or two here or there, but I don't think I think Republicans definitely have their too much momentum at this point that their Democrats are going to be picking much up.
And I would just build on that in terms of the national level, that anytime you have a midterm election, whatever the national, whatever party is and is in national office, the Democrats, usually it's the opposing party that usually picks up some seats in midterm elections. So if you have that kind of national perspective out there that the Republicans might be able to make some gains, there's talk about it happening in the U.S. Senate. And so that just becomes more helpful on the down ballot races for Republicans here in Tennessee. I think Andrew's right on point. I think the pendulum still hasn't swung all the way to the red yet. The question is just how many more election cycles do we need to go before we hit that peak? History will tell us on that.
Well, and also the state Republican Party is now engaged in a concerted effort to win as many elections as possible. It's called Red to the Roots, and I interviewed one of the executive director, in fact, of the Tennessee Republican Party about this last October, and I asked him specifically, how far does this go? And he says, anytime there's a potential for a partisan race, we want to be able to win that. And so it'll be interesting, like you said, to see how that turns out. What does Governor Haslam's popularity mean, Mark, for state legislators who do disagree with him? Obviously, when you've got a very popular chief executive, it's almost a political danger to sort of run away from that or to publicly fight with him or spar with him. What does this mean for legislative Republicans? Are they going to have to hold their tongues if he gets reelected in November for another 4 years?
They might have to, unless the local Tennessee legislator who's a Republican has a very clear idea about his constituency or her constituency in terms of being able to say that you can move away from the governor. Anytime you have the top Republican in your state who is a very well respected and in this case over 60% approval rating, You have to be very careful, and I come back to Dr. Fox in terms of the economics, in terms of if there's going to be some tight budgets and tight negotiation, you need to make sure that you're offering something to the governor, because right now he's in a position where he can call in favors and expect to be given to him.
Yeah, I don't get into the political side of this at all, so I'm not going to comment on the politics of it. But anything new that anyone in the General Assembly is interested in financing, they will have to make a very strong case. And they certainly would need the governor's support to do that. And so when you put the tight environment in there fiscally together with the politics, it puts even more constraints on what can happen.
And one of the things I've heard people sort of say about Governor Haslam, one of the rare negatives people talk about, is that he seems not to take very strong positions on certain issues, especially the more controversial. He likes to take a very middle path. But one thing he's definitely stuck to his guns about each year in his term of office is a conservative budget, something that doesn't go way beyond what Tennessee can afford. I imagine you expect that will continue in this current budget proposal that's being put together.
Absolutely. I think I've heard no discussion about any tax rate increase or change in this fiscal structure. And so what I expect is the governor to simply recommend a budget that's affordable. And if we see tax collections continue to weaken, that he'll even come in with an amendment that would cut it further. I mean, I expect to see from him a proposed budget that he thinks we could actually finance. And as I noted before, there's actually two issues that they're having to address. The first one is, how much money do we have this year? There certainly will be an under-collection, and that means there has to be a strategy for how to reduce expenditures or otherwise finance this year's under-collection. And then there's the problem of, how do you put a budget together next year, given the cost increases that are built into the ongoing structure and what will surely be a modest revenue expectation. You know, it may turn out to be a great year. The one thing I know about tax revenues is they are hard to predict, but you have to kind of operate, at least at this point, with the expectation that revenue growth remains slow for the foreseeable future.
974-5050 is the number to call if you have a question about state government politics, economics, education, any of the subjects for our guests. Not astrophysics. We don't have an astrophysicist today, but I'll try to answer it if I can. Now, one thing, Dr. Fox, you mentioned, the way the debate is shaping up in Nashville is one of belt tightening, a little bit of trying to hold back a little bit on things. But Tennesseans as a group are actually pretty confident about the state's economic health. That same Vanderbilt poll we talked about a few minutes ago found 66% of Tennesseans say they think the state's economy is doing pretty well. Do you think the reality of this year as it unfolds is going to live up to that optimism, or are people going to get let down?
Well, the economy is going to continue to grow. And so I need to be clear, nothing I'm suggesting is a recession or an actual decline in the economy. What we're talking about is continued growth in employment, probably something like 1.4-1.5% growth. Not a great year, but a pretty good year, at least average in terms of long-term growth performance. And so Tennesseans will see more jobs out there, and they'll see a better economic environment. But we have a tax structure that doesn't fully reflect that economic growth, and that's the fiscal problem. And so, you know, we always have to keep in mind that there's a correlation between what's happening in the economy and what's happening to tax revenues, but it's not perfect. And that translation from one to the other is part of the story here. And what traditionally happens in Tennessee is that over the long term, tax revenues grow more slowly than the economy. Historically, we made up for that with tax rate increases. If you look at the history, we raised the sales tax rate in 71, 76, 84, 92, 2002. And all of that was basically, plus some other increases, just enough to keep taxes constant as a share of the economy. What's happened is, I think the decision, you know, in many people's minds, is we don't want more tax rate increases. And so now we're seeing growth without rate increases. And historically, what that says, and we've seen it borne out so far, is that taxes will fall as a share of the state's economy. So that doesn't mean you can't put a budget together. It just says that the decisions get tougher and tougher as to how you do it. And you have to be very careful with it, as you should be. Yeah. With every dollar.
Okay. I'm sorry, Mark.
Yeah. No, I'm just going to, and just back to Bill's last comment there in terms of, and also with Governor Haslam, I think he learned the lesson of just watching the national debate and debacle, I guess, up in Washington during the government shutdown. I think Americans were universally unhappy with either party in terms of trying to deal with their fiscal house. And so any politician, I think, including the governor, recognizes a conservative budget is the way to go. Not only is there the constitutional mandate, you have to have a balanced budget, but I think if you start with making sure that you can save something for a rainy day, so to speak, I think you you tie into the voters very well. He's learned that lesson quickly.
Sorry, Mark, for interrupting. I didn't mean to. And what the governor has done, in fact, is to create a growing rainy day fund, despite really modest revenue growth since he became governor. Mm-hmm. And so he has been very careful to keep his fiscal house in order and not to spend every dollar on the mm-hmm. table, even in slow revenue growing years. Mm-hmm. Now, this year, it is tougher, Brandon, as you already noted. And I don't know whether he'll recommend an increase in the rainy day fund. We'll find out. But it certainly will be more challenging to continue expanding it than it has been in the earlier years.
Okay. We have a caller on the line. Jim, go right ahead with your question on Dialogue.
Yeah, the comment would be when we started out, you were talking about the right wing and a Tea Party people, and unlike a lot of people, you didn't do it in a negative way. I'm pretty proud of the right wing Tea Party people because that's what you're talking about: Japan, South Korea, Taiwan, LD Corporation, Samsung. They are true right wingers, and there is full employment over there. And the other thing is that the Republicans have a lot of state strength that they can't get nationally. For example, West Virginia, Obama lost every county, the same way in Oklahoma. Romney won every Oklahoma county. But anyway, my question is, can you explain what that supermajority is? Is it in both houses? And it's based on quorum or something, isn't it? I'm not sure on that, and appreciate the question. Appreciate the program.
Well, actually, if I could, Mark, do you have anything on this?
I mean, I was just going to say, just in terms of the numbers, I mean, I'm thinking about the 96 votes that I believe the General Assembly has allows mm-hmm. them to, folks out in Nashville might want to help me in terms of being able to kind of overrun any kind of vote on that one. Beyond that, in terms of the quorum, I don't know enough of the right. Robert's Rules of Order.
Okay, so Andrea, define the supermajority for us.
All right, so a majority is just, you know, having that. You know, that more than 50%. Mm-hmm. The supermajority is having a veto-proof body in the legislature. So essentially, there are enough Republicans in both the Senate and the House right now that if none of the Democrats showed up for work, Republicans can still do what they need to do. They can still pass legislation. So it's a quorum. And I believe the number of Republicans in the House is now 71, out of a 99-member majority, or 99-member body, you know, that's a clear majority. So, but also kind of to dive further into the caller's question, there are different camps of Republicans, different factions, if you will. You have your Tea Party folks in there. You have your establishment folks. Folks who are more in line with the governor's agenda. You have more of your business types who are strongly aligned to what the business's needs are. And it's not to say that those different camps don't all agree on many issues, but there are different factions within there. And I think one of the things we're going to see that kind of division on are one of the big education issues we're going to see in the next session, which is a debate on Common Core, these new standards that the state has implemented, many states have implemented to have new standards for what students are supposed to know when they leave a certain grade. And that is one of those issues that you have different perspectives. You have some folks who are on the Tea Party side who don't like this nationalizing of education because this had come down from, although there are a lot of people involved, it came down from Washington. Other states are adopting it. You have your business types who like Common Core. They see it as a way to better build the workforce of people that they're going to be hiring soon. And then you have the governor's folks who the governor is a big fan of Common Core and doesn't want to give any ground there. Or if any, it's very, very little. So, you do see these different groups within our own legislatures, especially because there are so many Republicans. And what we were talking about earlier with elections, the more Republicans we have in these chambers, the more we're going to see those kind of divisions, and they're not going to be so new to us as they've been the last few years with just having new Republican majorities for the first time.
Okay, Jim, thank you so much for your question. Andrea, for the answer. Mark, you had a point?
Yeah, I was just building on Andrea's good comment earlier about the pendulum swinging in terms of the Republicans inside Tennessee. I think there's also a discussion or debate, whether it's in Tennessee or nationally, regarding the Tea Party's pendulum, to what extent their power or influence in Republican politics is still peaking. I think that builds on the caller's question, just if that's still something where the energy is still there, can they continue to win elections and try to drive issues on budget or politics forward? Right.
Okay, well, we're going to pick up on education, and Andrea mentioned that just a moment ago. We'll do a lot more with that after this station break. First, at about 20 and a half minutes before the hour, this is Dialogue from WUOT News. Dialogue continues with you at 1:40 Eastern Time on this Wednesday afternoon. A balmy, what, probably 29 degrees outside at this moment. I'm Brandon Hollingsworth, and we are joined this hour on Dialogue, our theme, looking back at the big stories of 2013 and making some predictions or some guesses about what the way we think 2014 is going to shape up. Bill Fox is the director of the Tennessee Center for Business and Economic Research. Mark O'Gorman is a professor of political science at Maryville College. They're in the studio with me here in Knoxville. Andrea Zielinski, a reporter for the Nashville Post, joins us from Nashville, Tennessee. And Andrea, I want to go back to you because before the break we talked about education. That's another one of your beats. You cover the state legislature. You also take a look at education. So the debate over management of Tennessee's education system continued in 2013 and will undoubtedly pick up again later this month when the General Assembly comes back into session. And one of the big debates was over a school voucher program. So if you would, kind of outline what this debate was about and how the debate is going to resume as legislators come back next week.
Sure. So vouchers was one of, it's this idea of school vouchers. That's what opponents call them. Advocates call them opportunity scholarships. Essentially what they do is they allow parents to send their children to private schools using the public school dollars that are allocated to that student. Now, that becomes a very hot button issue because you have folks on the public education side who say, you know, this is taking money out of our school districts and taking kids who are probably, you know, have involved parents who are interested in their, you know, very engaged in their students' education, taking them all out of the district. And there are a lot of different layers within that, too. But you have proponents who say, you know, if a parent can't afford to send their child to a private school and are kind of landlocked, they shouldn't be driven to where they can send their kid by where they live. So that gives them options. So last year, this actually became a very interesting bill. The governor had spent about a year with a task force study the issue, kind of recommend if Tennessee were to do this, what's the best way? And the results of that study weren't really definitive. It was more kind of laying out, well, here are a whole lot of options you have. So I think the governor then decided he's going to run a bill. And I don't think the governor is a huge fan of vouchers, but I think he kind of saw the writing on the wall that, you know, Republicans, particularly more conservative Republicans, really wanted to institute a larger scale program that maybe he thought was a little bit more aggressive. So he laid out last year a fairly small program that would allow about 5,000 students across the state attending the state's, you know, worst schools to be able to use this kind of voucher idea to go to private schools. This bill, during debate, you know, some of those Republicans I was talking about who wanted a bigger bill, you know, kind of threatened to hijack it. And I guess that's maybe being a little, maybe it was a little bit more coy than that. But there was talk about, you know, them wanting to expand this to more middle class families, you know, not have so many barriers on this. And the governor ultimately pulled that bill, which was really, I think, significant. The governor likes to work with people. He might be someone who's in charge and, you know, as we said earlier, you know, can demand favors or ask for favors and expect that they're going to be given. But it, for him to kind of pull that off really said something about the kind of differences of opinion within the legislature and the governor's office. So we're definitely going to, well, we don't know for sure if we're going to see that idea again. I'd imagine we will. The governor hasn't decided whether he's going to propose that idea again or maybe tinker with it a little bit. He hasn't decided, which is interesting considering that was his bill to begin with. I imagine if he doesn't, there's probably a good chance we're going to see some of those Republicans wanting to propose that kind of bill, because this issue has been around for several years. It only hasn't gotten off the ground until maybe about the last year or so.
Okay. Richard is on the line with us. Go ahead with your question here on Dialogue.
Well, thank you, but you've moved ahead of me here. I wanted to ask a question about the last topic.
Okay.
And the issue was, what do your panelists think about the effect on revenue in Tennessee and the economy of Tennessee on, you know, eliminating the inheritance tax potentially eliminating the hall tax, and then refusing the expansion of Medicare. And is there a short-term and a long-term difference in the future effects? That's the question.
Oh, fantastic question. And thankfully, we have Bill Fox in the studio, because I don't have my abacus with me. Bill, you're the guy who looks at the numbers. These are obviously some pretty big issues that state legislators and the governor will have to evaluate. What are you seeing?
Well, the inheritance and gift taxes are going away. They'll be gone in the next couple of years. This costs Tennessee $100 million or so on an annual basis. Some small reductions in the hall income tax have been made, basically reducing the taxes on lower income people who might have been complying with it. Most of that tax remains in place. You know, should a decision be made to eliminate those taxes without raising a tax rate somewhere else, the state will simply have less money. We won't make up for that with sort of growth sufficient to offset the revenue loss. And so, you know, that's a public policy decision. Do we, you know, would we rather have a smaller government in exchange for those taxes, or maybe replace them with some other tax? And I've not heard any discussion of a replacement tax. Are these positives to attract higher income individuals to Tennessee? I've heard that argument made. I don't think the research supports that very much. Mm-hmm. I'm not saying you couldn't find an anecdote of somebody who would move to Tennessee because there's no inheritance tax, or would be here because we don't even have the hall income tax. But it would not have a significant effect based on what we've seen from research across the country on these kinds of issues.
Cool. Richard, great question. Thank you. Virginia's on the line with us now, and go right ahead, Virginia.
Hi.
Hey-o.
Well, my question, I'm concerned about the budget, too. And with, as I understood it, $2.2 billion that Tennessee could get by accepting an extension to the Medicaid program, I'm wondering if the governor, if there's any possibility he might change his mind on that, or is it too late?
I could bounce that over maybe to Andrea, because that's an issue that it's been talked about all throughout 2013. Governor Haslam had proposed a different kind of hybrid plan, a little bit of federal, a little bit of state going on. So how do you see that debate playing out, which again, is not going away this year?
I think that's going to be a slow debate, and it has been for the last year. Last March, the governor said, you know, he wasn't going to do a straight-up expansion, and instead he's going to look for kind of a compromise idea, find something that is unique to Tennessee that wouldn't just be a straight-up expansion of 10 care of the Medicaid program, because, you know, there are going to be costs of that down the line when the federal funds start to peel back a little bit. But we haven't seen a lot of movement there. The governor insists that he's, you know, still working on finding a compromise, finding something that, you know, that he can get the folks over in Washington to agree to, and the Republican supermajorities here in the legislature to agree to. And, you know, those are both two very philosophically different groups, and trying to find language in there and ideas in there that both groups are going to agree on is, I think the governor had said, it's like threading a needle from 1,000 yards or 100 yards or something along those lines. So at this point, he hasn't given up on it. However, I think I wouldn't expect to see too much progress in that respect, at least in the next year. There's not as much of a pedal to the metal need for it, because he would have needed to get the legislature to get on board before 2015 for that to kind of, you know, get that ball rolling. So I think he's got a lot more time. And I don't see a lot of sense of urgency there. I think it's going to be a bit of a slow burn.
Right. Andrea may be right about the politically how this plays out, but there will be, I think, a lot of pressure in Tennessee coming at least out of the healthcare community to do the expansion. I know the hospital association folks are very strongly in favor of it. And they may not be able to carry the day, but they're certainly concerned about getting that additional revenue. On the other side, I certainly appreciate the governor's concern that even if Congress lives to what it said in terms of the state's share of that, if the state had to pay another $100 or $150 million in TennCare or Medicaid expenses after this three-year window when a state share kicks in, I don't know where the state finds that kind of money. We're already talking about a very tight budget situation, and now we would suddenly incur a significant increase. And you know, 3 years isn't very far from now when you think about it. Mm. This is still in the first half or so of Governor Haslam's second term. And so this isn't something far into the future. This is a reality that would have to be confronted, by the middle point of his second term.
Thank you, Virginia, for that question as well. Andrea, I want to come back to you for just a moment to get a couple more education questions in. There's one in particular that I'm fascinated with, and this is an issue that may come up in the General Assembly this year, a battle over the future of the State Textbook Commission. That's the panel that makes recommendations about which textbooks can be purchased for use in public school classrooms around the state. They don't make the final word, but they have a list of recommendations, and then local school boards can purchase their books. Dolores Gresham, the chairwoman of the Senate Education Committee, is promising to address some allegations that have been out there about biases and inaccuracies in the textbooks that have been selected for use in Tennessee's classrooms. So briefly, if you would, set this up for us. What is being discussed here, and what's the tenor of that discussion?
Well, we heard earlier in the fall there were a series of hearings on, or a couple multi-day hearings on this, and you know, there's a group of parents who and folks in the community who were reading these books and have been reviewing books on their own and found a plethora of what they found to be biased. So that's clearly gotten the attention of mostly Republican lawmakers on the Hill, although some of some Democrats as well. But I think what we might be seeing is a reconstituting of the panel that reviews these textbooks. Right now the panel that currently there is very overwhelmed, and they've said as much. So I think what we're looking at is that as a basis. Now there could be a lot of politics, and it's probably expected that there will be a lot of politics in putting that together as to who would be on this board. Are we talking about legislators being on this board? Parents from this kind of group. How do they open that up? That'll definitely be something that we hear about this year.
Mm-hmm. To go back to economics for just a second, Mark, did you have something you wanted to?
No.
Oh, you lunged toward the microphone, and I thought
you were
going to wow us with something impressive. But for economics for just a moment, a little earlier this hour, Dr. Fox, we talked about growth in the manufacturing sector, that we saw jobs in manufacturing coming back, and it seems like in the last few months, just anecdotally, when I'm putting together my daily newscasts in the afternoons, we're seeing more about such and such metal manufacturing expanding, adding this many jobs, we're going to build this new product here in Tennessee. Manufacturing, even as recently as 2 or 3 years ago, was on its last legs in this country. I mean, many manufacturing states were going south. But now we've seen what some people have described as a manufacturing renaissance here in Tennessee and throughout the country. What's happening there? Why is manufacturing back?
Well, first of all, manufacturing never went away. That was really a misconception on people's part, in my view. We have to, in my mind, separate what's happening to manufacturing production from what's happening to manufacturing employment. And what's happened is we've had an incredibly productive manufacturing sector where we were able to grow output while employment fell consistently. And so it's actually done quite well on the output side. In other words, technology has stepped in and replaced workers. Plus, we shifted what we were manufacturing. If you went back to the many years ago when I came to Tennessee, we did a lot of cut and sew, leather goods, chemicals, this kind of thing. Mm-hmm. Today, we make automobiles.
Right.
And so we went from this very low-wage, low-skill industry to a very high-skill industry. So that's really what happened. I was looking at some numbers here that we really just put together today. We had 3.5% growth last year in employment in the durable goods sector. That's things with a life of 3 years or more. Think cars, that kind of thing. I mean, that's incredible growth in Tennessee. And the non-durable sector, similarly, the shorter life things, also has done very well. And so we have seen since this end of the recession, excellent growth in manufacturing. And that's building on the productivity gains that were already taking place. And so output is really expanding well. And so some of this is a little bit of moving back to the U.S., and making us more competitive with the world. But a lot of it was, again, that manufacturing never went away. It just, for a while, we were replacing so many workers with new capital.
Right. It seemed to transform into a new kind of manufacturing.
It's a different industry.
Right.
On the new kind of manufacturing, it might be also a discussion on sectors that might become part of the discussion in 2014. I think energy sectors, whether it's renewable energy, where is its pendulum swinging? And also just because you can't pick up a news story without hearing something about hydraulic fracturing and all the different energy extraction issues. Is that something that comes to Tennessee in 2014?
Briefly, I want to cover also Republican primaries before we get out of here. I mean, that's something that's coming up, and we have two interesting races, one of which is for Tennessee's senior senator, Lamar Alexander, a man who served many terms in Congress, former governor of the state, a very well-thought-of person, but seeing a challenge from within his own party. In some ways, Alexander's race does sort of mirror some of those qualities we were talking about earlier, the split within the Republican Party and challenges from the right. Mark, how do you see this playing out? He's got incumbency, which is a strong arrow in the quiver, but he's also got a lot of challengers.
Right. Yeah, I think the challenge is becoming different folks inside the party and that. Where I think, though, the problem is for those challengers is the fact that, one, Lamar Alexander has strong name recognition, very positive approval ratings, I think. Also, he was reelected in 2008 with 65%. All those different factors that I'm indicating make it very difficult for any kind of even primary challenger to raise the funds in the short amount of time to let loose and be a competitive challenger. I mean, there will be challenges from the right, but I think it won't materialize quickly enough to prevent this Lamar from going forward to the general election.
That said, do you think he's going to have to run with that in mind? In other words, he's going to have to cater his platform to beating these challengers and then maybe modify it over the summer before we head to November?
I think so. It may not be as much as maybe he that it'll have to, because right now the challengers aren't necessarily the name recognition for those other challengers isn't building forward as much. Mm-hmm. Any politician, Haslam, do the same thing, is also trying to modulate their primary rhetoric versus their general election rhetoric. But I think as much Senator Alexander is kind of thought of as kind of one of the statesmen of the Senate, and as a result he's one of those kind of moderate Republican wise souls that both parties want to talk to. I think he can run on that platform and be as successful as anybody in both primary or general.
Well, as we get closer to the end of the hour, I want to go around the metaphorical table here. And, because if we had a real table, it would stretch from Nashville to here, and that's a very inefficient table. But to go around, Andrea, we'll start with you. And I just want to get some predictions. Nothing outlandish. We're not living on the moon by the end of 2014. But what do you think is going to be one of the big stories that will emerge as the legislature comes back into session? What will you be keeping an eye on?
Particularly education. I mean, there are a half dozen very serious, very realistic bills that we're going to see. And we've talked about a couple of them, Common Core, any changes we see to that program, vouchers, that'll be another big one. There's also the idea of charter school authorizer, the state having the ability to approve charter schools in areas where the local school boards have denied that charter school. Textbooks, as we had talked about, teacher pay, which we had mentioned. The governor is also going to be trying to put some emphasis on higher ed. So I think we're going to see some stuff there. But in addition to that, first of all, budget is going to be a huge issue. Education issues are going to be very big. And on top of that, there's always the ever interesting discussion about wine in grocery stores, which is poised to be the closest it's going to it's been yet. The question is it going to be enough to get over the finish line? So right now, both speakers in both chambers are fans of the legislation, and both say that there are talks going on behind closed doors about trying to make that legislation something palatable to all parties involved. So the question is whether or not that's actually going to happen this year. It's the closest it's ever been, but will they be able to get that over the finish line?
All right, Dr. Fox, prediction for 2014.
Well, the economy continues growing. That's the good news. But the budget battles in Nashville will be a big issue, particularly as there's a few new things, the drive to 55 by the governor. Mm-hmm. And one education issue that's always lingering in the background is the BEP funding generally. And the fact that we ended out stuck between the original BEP and what Governor Bredesen tried to implement. He only got it halfway implemented. And Nashville recently came out and said it was going to challenge the way in which schools were being funded. So,
Dr. O'Gorman, you got like 5 seconds.
Yep, real quick. United States Senate, will it stay Democrat or go Republican? Most of the most active competitive races for the U.S. Senate are right around Tennessee. We got a front row seat.
Bill Fox, Mark. I cut myself off. Andrea Zielinski, thank you so much for joining us. And to everybody who called, Greg Hill is our producer. Dialogue is a production of WUOT News. I'm Brandon Hollingsworth. Special thanks to Spotland Productions. It's 2 o'clock.